Hello, everybody. This is Jack Foster here with the VR2 on SI podcast. I got Matt Ray here. Long time no see for Matt Ray on this pod. But before we talk about all the Georgia game and all the recruiting stuff we want to get to today, I want to tell all of you guys that we have changed our name from VR2 on SI to Volunteer Country on SI. We have been Volunteer Country actually on the Sports Illustrated website for quite some time, but we just decided an official name change on our social media for this podcast was the right call to make at this time. And Matt, you want to talk anything more about the name change?
Yeah, you know, it was just something that we had, you know, kind of been working through since going over onto the Sports Illustrated network in terms of just, you know, replacing everything. Just wanted to keep everything flowing smoothly at first, you know, making a network jump and a name change at the same time, because we weren't sure which way SI was going to go in terms of names and what they were going to do with branding at the time, as they were kind of, you know, bringing new team sites on and revamping towards your recruiting, you know, push, things like that. So everything kind of, you know, plateaued out there as there was some changes going on with their structure and things like that. So now finally settled in a good groove. It's honestly probably a little overdue. Somebody should have probably said something to me before about it, but, you know, just as simple as going in and changing the name on social media. But, yeah, you know, same content, same guys, same work every day. So just nothing new, just a different name.
Absolutely. Now, everybody, you can enjoy today's episode of the Volunteer Country on SI podcast, courtesy Matt Ray and myself. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Volunteer Country on SI podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jack Foster, joined by VR2 on SI, Volunteer Country on SI. I'm still getting used to the name change, Matt. Lead publisher, Matt Ray. Matt, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, Jack, I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
Pretty good. It's a great Thursday afternoon here, you know, just living the life of a journalist on campus day in, day out. It's great. And I'm excited to talk some recruiting with you, which is obviously your specialty, and also to preview Tennessee, Georgia. So, Matt, I'll start by, you know, talking about Walter Nolan. He obviously committed to Texas A&M a little bit ago rather than Tennessee. Just what do you think about Walter's announcement? You know, is it surprising? Just your relationship with Walter and how he came to this decision.
Well, you know, I think this is probably the first opportunity that I've had to talk a little bit publicly about this in terms of just, am I surprised by it? You know, I had a lot of people reach out to me on the day that it happened. And, you know, did I see this coming? Yeah, I don't think it really caught me by surprise with Walter. It's been a very hard recruitment to track. It's been a very hard recruitment to stay in. There's been a lot of twists, a lot of turns. Sometimes Walter's doing interviews, sometimes Walter Sr.'s doing the interviews, you know, the whole family's active in the process. They've taken a lot of visits. They've listened to a lot of schools. They've spent a lot of time, you know, in this recruiting process. I think, and I talked about this earlier on this podcast, was I think everybody kind of got lost in the move to Knoxville. When Walter Nolan came to Knoxville, he was a national recruit. He was the number one recruit in the country. He had been a five-star, you know, or a top guy wherever you looked for, you know, the better part of 2.5 years. And he's been all over the country. He's been to, you know, he started out his career in Mississippi at Olive Branch, a little powerhouse down there. He's been at St. Benedict's. He's been at IMG. Now he's at Powell. He's been to all these camps. You know, that's something that they've worked hard. So Walter Nolan knows a lot of people. He's listened to a lot of pitches, and in Texas A&M, worked really, really hard to get him out to College Station and to be able to say, hey, you know, this is what we have to offer in terms of being a defensive lineman. You know, come look at our core group, how we've recruited, how you can be a part of them, what we can bring in around you in this class. And the Nolan family was impressed there, you know, during that last week of the summer where the recruiting period was open, and it opened that door for Texas A&M to sneak in and make a push. And they were able to do that. They were able to get him on campus for, you know, Alabama. He storms the field when they beat the Crimson Tide, you know, a major, probably the upset of the year so far. And, you know, he's down there. But what gets lost in all that is, oh, they beat Alabama. Their defensive line was once again dominant, you know, in that performance, and they continue to be one of the best front sevens, you know, in the SEC right now. And
right.
I think Walter's very intrigued by that, playing with good players around him, things like that. And, he has a strong relationship with that staff out there with Jimbo Fisher. And, I think we may have the only quotes from Walter on the decision to commit to Texas A&M, or at least the only quotes before he went public with it. It just came down to that feeling that he got from Jimbo and that staff. And he goes out there, and, Texas A&M is buzzing like wildfire on the morning that he's out there. And, tracking these visits, trying to stay in that national recruitment, from my side, it had been that way a couple times before. Like, people reaching out, Walter Nolan's at Texas A&M. But I got a couple of texts, and I filled in a couple of calls that morning that were like, hey, today is legitimately the day. Then checked around, and it was going to be the day, and he went through with his plan to announce it live on the 50-yard line there with Jimbo on Instagram Live. And it doesn't come as a total shock, and I don't think it comes as a total shock to Tennessee that this recruitment's a long way from over. I think for Walter Nolan, it's still going to be, in the end, Texas A&M and Tennessee. Now, if you're Tennessee, you have a chance to do what you did back in the early stages of this recruitment, when the 2022 class went on, the clock, Walter Nolan puts you in the top 10, and then he takes you out. He goes to 8. So I was involved with both of those. We broke down his top 10 before he released it. Vols are in it. Didn't have a good feel about what Coach Hopple and the program had to offer. Do the top 8, Vols are out of it. I asked him on that Zoom call, hey, are these teams out? No, nobody's out. And he has maintained that throughout his recruitment process, as hard as it has been to follow, that nobody is out of this recruitment for him. And, Texas A&M is a prime example. I think if you're Tennessee, you get him over this weekend. If that goes through, it's not going to be an official visit. They've already kind of had been talking about pushing that back, that official back, until December. And I think that's what's going to happen this weekend, is you're going to see Walter come over in an unofficial capacity and then try to get him back to campus in December. And you just have the opportunity to lay low and keep chopping wood there. And, Texas A&M knows that that's their biggest contender. This recruitment's a long way from over. Walter Nolan, I think, is very happy with his Texas A&M pledge. But I can tell you, this is a kid that's just kind of happy to get a breath of fresh air. And, I'll always kind of advocate for the kids, but I've seen Walter Nolan. I filmed his commitment interview with him. I filmed the reflection story with his family. I was there for all of that. And I've seen him at some high points, and I've seen him at some low points in terms of dealing with this recruitment. It gets to be overwhelming. And I think for Walter Nolan right now, it's nice to be able to just take a breath of fresh air and try to get your feet back under you, know you're locked in, at least for now, with Texas A&M, and try to move forward and see who really wants you and what's going to happen, coming down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody, I'm going to drop the link to Matt Ray and SIL American's John Garcia's exclusive on Walter Nolan and his family reflecting on the recruiting process in the podcast description. So be sure and check that out. But an absolutely incredible job from Matt Ray, start to finish, on Walter Nolan's commitment. And Matt, I want to ask you, Tennessee's defensive line has really improved since Rodney Garner came to the helm for them. Matthew Butler's had an incredible season. We've seen Tyler Barron have a good season. They've had a lot of tackles for losses. And I know you've mentioned that Walter has always wanted to play on a defense on a team that had a, exciting offense. And we've definitely seen that in Josh Heupel's first year. So do you think Tennessee has helped their case this year, especially in Josh Heupel's first year with Walter Nolan?
Yeah, I think without question, Tennessee has helped their case. I think the family's kind of divided in terms of, can you pass up the opportunity to play for Rodney Garner, given what he has done as a defensive line coach? And then he comes to Tennessee, and you take a group that has had their struggles, is not that deep in terms of just a number standpoint, and you just get so much production. Yeah, I think Tennessee definitely helped their chances there. And again, this weekend, you're going to face another strong test. Walter Nolan has not been to Tennessee that many times. It's going to be the second time that he's been to a game at Tennessee this year. Given the proximity to campus, they have done their due diligence of taking trips elsewhere. So you're going to see – he's going to get to see this defensive line against the number one team in the country, a team that he really respects in Georgia and what they can do. And you know, he's going to see if this defensive line can battle. But I think he's also going to have a chance to see how much more of a need he may be, you know, for this defensive front to get to that next level as compared to what Texas A&M needs. Because Texas A&M's kind of there in terms of being an elite defensive line. Tennessee's defensive line has used a rotation and has been really productive and, you know, really bought into what Rodney Garner's selling, but they still lack some of those true elite players on that defensive line, which is why you're recruiting guys like, you know, Walter Nolan and, you know, down the line of guys. But
yeah,
I think he's there for Ole Miss. He's there for the night game, electric atmosphere. I think we see that. But Ole Miss's offensive line isn't Georgia's offensive line.
Right.
So it's going to be more between the tackles, runs, and, you know, where defensive linemen can be a factor in this game. I think this is going to be a good opportunity to showcase to Walter Nolan what Tennessee wants from their defensive linemen in these heavyweight football games and how he can help them get to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. Going to be a really tough challenge for Tennessee this weekend. And Matt, I want to talk about some guys, DeMario Tolan, Zaquan Frazier a little bit, but first, any other high school guys that Tennessee is, you know, in the thick of it with recruiting before we move on here?
You know, I think Tennessee's done a really good job here of late with a lot of guys. I think they're sitting comfortable for several guys. But, you know, it's just kind of that time of year where new teams are either reaching out to guys or old teams that have expressed interest before start going back into the picture. And as programs continue to evaluate every single option, I think Tennessee has done a great job with DeMario Tolan, even since he committed to LSU, staying in contact there. Expect him in town this weekend. You know, the LSU commitment is going to come up, take another look, took an official visit over the summer, has been impressed, continues to be impressed with, you know, what Tennessee's told him. And an interesting pitch from Coach Brian G. Marie was that, you know, right after Tennessee lost to Alabama, G. Marie got on the phone with Tolan and called him and told him, you know, like, hey, we were close tonight. You know, the scoreboard basically doesn't reflect that we were that close, but we were close. And we felt like defensively you were one of the pieces that we were missing. And that's, you know, for Tolan, a big pitch to hear. You know, I think for any kid, that's a big pitch to hear. Like, hey, we were on the verge of beating Alabama, but we need a guy like you here. So, I think Tennessee's continued to do a good job there. I think Tennessee's continued to do a good job in Georgia with Christian Harrison and Caleb Webb. Continued to push for both of those guys. New competitors kind of there with Michigan coming into the picture for Caleb Webb. He took an official visit. Tennessee should get an official visit later on in the cycle. And then Christian Harrison, I mean, I talked to him the other day. He's going to have every offer in the country before long. The one-time Liberty pledge now has Florida, West Virginia, Kansas State, Virginia Tech. He was down at Auburn, Georgia Tech. All these schools expressing interest in reaching out, Nebraska. So he's got a lot on his trip, and he's got official visits to use, and I expect him to. You know, he has a great resource in his dad, Rodney Harrison, former NFL great. To lean back on there, but Tennessee's done a really good job there. Had him to campus a couple of times, offered in the middle of those trips, and I think they were really impressed with his length, you know, and kind of what his length and size, which when we saw him a few weeks ago, that was what we were impressed with, was his length and his size, his ability to really be pretty versatile in coverage. So a guy that not that highly rated right now, but has, you know, these big schools coming in for him and, you know, is going to see a bump in the rankings and has a lot to offer as he continues to grow as a football player. And if you look at his dad didn't go to a big college either. So, you know, it looks like Christian's going to get the chance, obviously, but, yeah, you know, just a really, really good bloodline to come from there. And then, you know, I think elsewhere, Tennessee's just, you know, kind of steadily, you know, making ground up on guys that are committed elsewhere. I think they've had good success with Jordan Thomas, a guy that I've talked back to, but he's, you know, kind of walked into his season. His high school team's 11-0. They're, you know, looking to, you know, continue their performance. His that defense has only gave up just a handful of points all year. So he's really locked into that. He's already committed to Mississippi State. So I don't think he's in a hurry to, you know, really rush anything. He's been to Tennessee a handful of times. We'll take an official visit later. You know, Justin Williams, the East Paulding running back, is a guy that Tennessee recently offered. You should expect him to get to campus sometime soon, I would imagine. It's not that far of a drive. He's committed to West Virginia, but just a bigger physical back that can do a lot that Tennessee seems to have some interest in after offering. And I think the interest is, you know, reciprocated from him. So, you know, you start looking at these guys, I think Tennessee's, you know, setting up and in a position to make some moves down the stretch. And we're here to November 11th. So I understand people being a little antsy. We're going on 3 months now without a commitment, I guess. I think the last commitment was about mid-August. So, right. You know, I understand people being a little antsy, you know, when's the next commitment going to come? But when you kind of look across the country, there's not a ton of commitments flooding in right now. I think all these kids got out, took those visits, and now they're having to slow down.
Yeah, so, it's just a slow period for the recruiting.
Yeah. You know, just in general, you know, there's not a lot going on and not a lot of planned commitments, I don't feel like. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the next few months or in the next few weeks. But, I think Tennessee's in a good spot to start really making pushes towards the early signing period and close out with a pretty good class coming out of December.
Yeah, and absolutely. And Tennessee's wins against, you know, Kentucky, dominant wins against Mizzou and South Carolina have to help matters, keeping it close with Bama for, you know, all of 47 minutes. So Tennessee's done themselves some favors here as of late. And Matt, before we get into the Georgia game, I want to touch on Zaquan Frazier, the Coffeyville Community College JUCO guy. Just what have you seen from him and, you know, his relationship with Tennessee?
Well, you know, I think when you look at kind of what Tennessee's doing on the recruiting front right now, they're, you know, making waves with Keontae Scott out of Snow College in Utah, Zaquan Frazier, Jeffrey Mbaugh from Independence. You know, they're in on a handful of junior college guys right now, and those are guys that are going to have, you know, a couple of years left but have already played football, and that's something that I think, you know, Tennessee's going to need to look toward in the future in terms of just, you know, rebuilding the depth and getting, you know, back to where they need to be is going to be relying on some of those JUCO guys. I don't think you're going to see them go, you know, just all JUCO, but defensively they are looking for help on the JUCO side. And Zaquan Frazier has been fantastic at Coffeyville. Marquise Gilbert at Hutch has been fantastic. Scott has been fantastic at Snow College. So these are, you know, a group of guys. Those three right there in particular are cornerbacks that are really, really long, all, you know, like 6'3" and above, really good man coverage skills. And I think that's what you see, what you're going to see from Tim Banks in the secondary is these guys want length and they want guys that can run. And I think they think with that, they can make up for a lot. And so far, you know, like you said, give Tennessee credit for good showings, but their defensive backs have played fairly well for the most part this year. You know, you're not seeing Tennessee give up that pop slant over the middle. I know a lot of people like to credit that to Henry Toa-Toa, but you know, when you're giving up inside leverage right away from your star position or your nickel position, you know, you're not going to expect a linebacker to be able to turn and run with a guy like, you know, Kiaris Jackson at Georgia. It's not going to happen. So you know, credit Tennessee to what they've done this year. And it's a conversation that I had with a lot of people earlier in the year before the season started was, you know, how do you think Tennessee can recruit? Tennessee recruits itself. They shouldn't have that big of a trouble, even if Josh Heupel can't recruit. Well, one, let me tell you this, Josh Heupel can recruit.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. You know, people can knock him for Walter Nolan, whatever you want. That's a national recruitment. Just because the kid moved to your backyard doesn't mean anything. But the way Josh Heupel was recruited with, you know, the transparent approach and through, you know, people wondering about a bowl ban and sanctions and everything like that has actually been pretty phenomenal. But I've said this since early on, since the spring, it's going to come down to what kind of product Tennessee puts on the field. And they have put an exciting product on the field this fall, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. They definitely have. And Matt, I wanted to also ask you, with Harrison Bailey entering the transfer portal, it's going to leave, you know, Joe Milton and Hendon Hooker presumably both going to be here in Tennessee next year. Hendon Hooker has one more year of eligibility, but we also got Taven Jackson coming in, the 2022 recruit at quarterback. Do you expect Tennessee to make any sort of push for quarterback depth in the transfer portal, or do you think they'll end up rolling with those three guys along with walk-ons and other guys next year?
Well, you know, we'll see. I think it's very interesting to see how they handle that. Obviously, Hendon Hooker's playing like one of the best quarterbacks in America. And, you know, I think he's at least got to take a peek. I don't think anything serious, but I think he's at least got to look out there and say, hey, you know, is my name being mentioned anywhere on any quarterback draft board? You know,
right.
He's a guy that's older in his career and, you know, might want to look toward, you know, that direction. I do lean towards Hendon Hooker being back next year, just based on some of the early conversations that I've had with people around the program and, you know, that have a little bit better feel than I do. But, you know, like you said, you have Taven Jackson coming in. You know, I think Joe Milton's the wild card in that factor, right? So he comes here from Michigan. He wins the starting job. He really struggles. He has the major gaffe against Ole Miss.
Yeah.
But Joe Milton may have the option to transfer again.
Okay.
You know, that's not something that I've asked anybody, but he was a graduate transfer coming out of Michigan. So it kind of depends on if he used that graduate transfer or the one-time transfer rule. You would have to think that he used a graduate transfer if it was an option. I know he graduated in the spring before he came to Tennessee. And if he used that graduate transfer as the one-time way to get through, then he still got the one-time exception next year. So, it, you know, is he going to stick around because he's a guy that's going to be his fourth year? You know, is he willing to stick behind Hendon Hooker for another year? So I think if you're Tennessee, you still have to explore options in the transfer portal regardless.
Right.
You know, with the way this offense is set up, the way that they're going to use the quarterback and run them a little bit more, I think you have to look at the transfer portal at least a little bit. And if there's somebody out there that you trust that can run your offense, you have to, you know, have to at least give that a serious look and kind of determine, you know, that based on numbers. I don't think, you know, that's – I think that's something that will kind of be situational going maybe like kind of like what happened with Joe Milton. Whoever's available coming out of, you know, this season, you know, there's going to be guys available. You know, Harrison was not for his decision to jump in the portal, but, you know, Spencer Rattler's headed there sooner than later. Miles Brennan's in a day after Harrison. You know, based on conversations that I've had, you have to think a couple of the Ohio State kids might end up in the portal. Who knows what's going to happen with a transfer from Florida, Anthony Richardson and Emory Jones. Both those guys can't be thrilled about what has happened down there. You know, you have to think Florida loses at least one of those guys. It's going to be a ton of names in the portal. And then who's there after the spring, you know? Is it going to be another clean out? So I think Tennessee, it's situational. If you feel like there's a guy out there that can change your roster and really help your room, you go get them. But I think, you know, it's just going to be tough to call. You know, is how long is Joe Milton going to hang around? Is he comfortable waiting and developing behind Hendon Hooker? We'll see.
Yeah, and it's a great problem to have for Tennessee, you know, talking about these quarterbacks. Hendon Hooker has provided a life that they haven't had in years, probably since Josh Dobbs. So, yeah, on the up and up for that position group in Tennessee. Matt, you ready to talk Vols Bulldogs?
Yeah, I am. But let me go back to one more thing. I do want to be clear in one thing. You know, coming out of fall camp and coming out of spring and early in fall camp, that quarterback battle truly was all over the place. You know, at one point, it could have been any of those guys. Right. Hendon really struggled with turnovers at times in fall camp. And, you know, that's kind of why Joe got the nod. So Joe ends up winning that, you know, battle in fall camp. And, you know, it was interesting to that room because all three of those guys felt like they had done enough steel to win the job. All three. You know,
even Brian
Maurer
to an extent. For a while anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, Brian Maurer still, what, the fourth practice of the year, I guess.
Right.
Thought he should have been the guy. But all three of those guys thought that they, you know, had done enough to win that job. So, you know, that's not to say that Joe Milton – my comment was not to say that Joe Milton was going to transfer or anything like that. Joe Milton has beat Hendon Hooker out in a quarterback competition before.
Yeah.
And Hendon has thrived on opportunity. So, again, to me, it's just Joe Milton is the wild card in that situation, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, so, all right, Vols Bulldogs – Tennessee is hosting the number one team in the nation in Georgia this Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern in Neyland Stadium on CBS. We got SEC Nation coming to town, Paul Feinbaum, you name it, all those guys. It's going to be an electric atmosphere in Knoxville this weekend. But Matt, Georgia, like I said, number one team in the nation, number two defense in terms of yards per game allowed. They're only allowing 3.8 yards per play. Just a really great unit here. Only six opposing touchdowns have been scored against them. So just how, you know, we've seen Tennessee's passing game be so electric. That's how they got up on Kentucky. How is Tennessee going to continue this momentum against such a vaunted Georgia defense?
Well, it's going to be tough. You know, let's not make any mistakes about that. It's going to be tough. I think you can look back to last year in the Georgia-Alabama game and see that Alabama had success against Georgia because they were able to challenge them vertically, but they were able to balance them, you know, keep them off balance and run the football and have success in that way. You go back before that, and Tennessee challenges Georgia vertically and takes a lead into halftime with a couple, you know, deep shots down the sideline.
Right.
Georgia utilizes big athletic guys in the secondary, and I think Tennessee can challenge Georgia in that aspect on Saturday, but can the offensive line hold up? Is, you know, Georgia's going to get after you. Kirby's going to create exotic pressures. He's going to come from out of nowhere, but Josh Heupel is going to try to counteract that with tempo and make it tougher to get those calls in and, you know, work in behind those blitzes to create opportunities for those faster receivers to get upfield. So it's going to be a little bit of a chess match early on. I think for Tennessee, the biggest thing is protecting Hendon Hooker. And I know that probably goes without saying. It's going to probably help that Georgia's not going to have Adam Anderson, but they still have Jordan Davis. They still have Devontae White, who I think does not get enough respect. I've been watching some Georgia All-22 film this week from the Kentucky game, and I think Devontae White is just a little notch below Jordan Davis, which allows both of those guys to feed off of each other, not get double-teamed as much, and have success one-on-one. And then you have, you know, Nolan Smith coming off the edge, who has, you know, really started to play up to his potential. So it's going to be tough, you know, for Tennessee to protect Hendon Hooker against this Georgia front with as long as they are, as athletic as they are, as big as they are. But if you can protect Hendon Hooker, I think you can have some success, but you have to be able to keep Georgia off balance. You have to be able to run the ball at least a little bit. And last year in Athens, after Tennessee had the lead, we saw them just get shut down in the second half. They could not run the football. And when Georgia can pin their ears back and come after you and let their guys work in coverage, you're not going to have success.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned the physical Georgia corners. Will Tennessee speedsters and, you know, Velus and Javonte Payton, you think, have more success, or a physical guy like Cedric Tillman? Which matchup is better for Tennessee?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. I think Cedric Tillman is, you know, really breaking out. And I think that goes without saying. You know, give him some of the passes that Joe Milton, you know, threw over his head a few times. And Cedric Tillman's having a serious season. You know, it was Josh Palmer last year that, you know, had success against Georgia, you know, tracking the ball down the field and winning matchups against those cornerbacks. I think Tillman's going to have some success. I think, you know, underneath, if you're Tennessee, you have to take what Georgia gives you early and not make mistakes and not press because you're playing the number one team in the country. I think if you're, you know, I think that's going to lead to Velus and Javonte being able to have success. But again, you can't press. You can't try to do too much. You got to take what they give you and move the sticks and try to sustain some drops.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Tyon Evans and Jabari Small, their health has been in question all week. We saw them both get banged up against Kentucky last week. If those two won't be able to go, could you see Tennessee getting one-dimensional really quickly this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing is you look at those two guys and what they bring. It's pretty apparent that Jalen Wright, as a ball carrier, has a lot of potential. We saw that against Kentucky. He comes in a crucial drive and just helps Tennessee, you know, march down the field. And, you know, a lot of that's his speed, and he showed patience, but he struggled mightily as a pass blocker on Saturday night against the Wildcats. And I think for Tyon and Jabari, they have both made strides since week one in the pass blocking category. So, one, you've got to be able to protect Hendon, you know, what I went back to. And two, I think this week you have to get Hendon involved in the run game earlier. It didn't seem like he ran a lot against Alabama until later. Didn't seem like he ran a lot against Ole Miss until later. And he didn't run against Kentucky until later. So you've got to get Hendon involved in the run game a little bit more. But yeah, you just have to find a way to keep Georgia off balance. And I'm sure Tennessee's going to try to do that with motions and different formations and alignments. And of course the tempo. So it's going to be interesting to see if both of those guys are healthy. I think they'll be available on Saturday, but you know, this ankle injury with Tyon has continued to bother him. Jabari has continued to have setbacks, that he struggled through. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be an interesting game if both of those guys aren't able to go on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's really frustrating that these guys keep sustaining these injuries, because Jabari Small looked great. You know, he was finally healthy against Kentucky last week, and that one cutback he had on that 37-yard touchdown run was just electric, and we know what Tyon Evans can do. So it's just really unfortunate that those guys have had to deal with those injuries all throughout the season. But Matt, I want to move on to talking about Tennessee's defense and how they match up with Georgia's offense. You know, obviously Georgia's defense is their strong suit. Their offense is just kind of, you know, it's solid. It's not bad, but it's not explosive like Tennessee's is. Who do you expect Georgia's, like any offensive players on Georgia's offense, to give Tennessee's defense trouble? Who are we looking at here?
Well, I look to James Cook. It's a guy that I think has been undervalued during his time at Georgia. He's a really good receiver out of the backfield, does so many different things for them. You know, I think if you're Georgia, I think Tennessee's going to have some success stopping Georgia's run. I say that in terms of just looking at what they did against Alabama. They obviously didn't have success with Kentucky. Zamir White's going to pound it up in there, and you know later in that game they're going to grind on you. It's just a matter of time until they do. But I think when you look at the, you know, the way that Georgia and Alabama run, you know, out of that shotgun look with those big heavier backs, they are going to, you know, have some success stopping that run earlier in the game. And to me, if that's happening, you have to get a guy like James Cook involved out of the backfield and get creative with his touches. And that's a guy that's going to be – it's going to be a lot harder for Tennessee's running back or linebackers to run with. I don't think they've seen a running back with that type of skill set this year.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a good point there. And some questions have been thrown at Josh Heupel this week during midweek pressers about Stetson Bennett, because, you know, Tennessee's had a lot of trouble defending running quarterbacks like Bryce Young occasionally, definitely Matt Corral, even Will Levis to an extent. Do you expect Stetson Bennett to try and use his wheels against Tennessee?
Well, Stetson Bennett can certainly use his wheels. I think Georgia times, you know, the way that they move the pocket for Bennett very well, and he creates, you know, outside of that. And sometimes I think he throws better on the run than he does from in the pocket. And maybe that's because he is a little bit of a smaller guy, can see the field a little bit more clearly. But, yeah, I mean, I think you have to account for Stetson Bennett's legs on Saturday. You don't want to, you know, especially if his game's back and forth and tight for a little while, you don't want to look back. If you're me, and this is just from my perspective, you don't want to look back at a point in that game and say, man, we had them right there, but we didn't account for Stetson Bennett.
Right. You know, and that's what's happened a lot over.
And that's what's happened a lot. Yeah. You know, and they've played some really, really good running quarterbacks, you know, Matt Corral especially. But I don't think, you know, you have to account for Stetson Bennett at some point. I think back to a few years ago, you know, Aaron Murray pulled a quarter. It's been more than a few years ago. but Aaron Murray, you know, pulled a quarterback keeper and rumbled down through there. And that was a crucial moment in one of those Tennessee-Georgia games. So I think if you're Tennessee, you have to make sure that you have a way to account for Stetson Bennett. I think you have to get creative. Yeah, I think when Tennessee was able to really pin their ears back and come after Will Levis last week, they had success. It was late in that game, but Tim Banks brought some timed up pressures that got home. And Byron Young continues to keep getting better each week. And, you know, you're seeing Aaron Beasley and Jeremy Banks. It's, you know, I think a lot of people express frustration towards those guys because sometimes they're getting, you know, making a tackle 5-6 yards down the field, but they're so close on some of these things, you know, just from taking that next step. You can see it right there, and you have to feel like this Tennessee staff is going to get them there at some point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's especially in Juwan Mitchell's absence. I've been really impressed with, you know, Jeremy Banks and Aaron Beasley stepping up to the plate week in, week out. But if you could say there has to be one X factor on this Tennessee defense to limit this Georgia offense, who would that X factor be?
Say that again. One X factor on Tennessee's defense eliminate the Georgia offense.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm going to say Jeremy Banks. I mean,
yeah, just stopping everything. Yeah, right there. Yeah.
If you're Tennessee, you need a guy like Jeremy Banks, who is probably the most physical guy on the defense for the most part. You need him to play at his potential. You need him to be a thumper. You need him to, you know, not have lapses in coverage. And I think that's how you get off the field. But, you know, it needs to be Jeremy Banks meets Zamir White, you know, multiple times.
Right.
You know, for Tennessee to have success, you can't have Zamir White running, you know, wild in the Tennessee secondary, or they're really going to have success.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point there. And on, let's go to Tennessee's offense. I meant to ask you this earlier, but you talked about, you know, being physical, protecting the line of scrimmage. Who has to be Tennessee's offensive X factor to have some offensive success against Georgia?
You know, I mean, I'm not going to say the whole offensive line.
But, I mean, though, that group.
I mean, that group, I think, is.
That works, just, yeah.
You know, so important on Saturday. Again, just in terms of protecting Hendon Hooker and being able just to get a little bit of push. I think when you look at what Tennessee's done, they have had so much success on first downs. You haven't seen many three and outs from Tennessee this year. And that's what Georgia does so well. They get teams off the field. So you've got to be able to move the chains early on, because if you don't, it's just going to work the same way with that tempo. If you come out and run three quick plays and get right back on the ball, you know, or punt the ball, and Georgia sustains a drive or whatever, and you do three more quick plays and back out, the defense is right back on the field. So it's the same as scoring a lot if you're not, you know, sustaining some drives here and there. So you have to be able to get a push on first down. And listen, it's not be able to run the ball for 250 yards. That would obviously be great for Tennessee. If Tennessee runs the ball for 250 yards on Georgia on Saturday and they don't leave that game with a win, then, boy, something, you know, seriously wrong happened.
Yeah.
But it's just being able to run the ball when you need to. You know, on a third and one, can you run the ball? On first and 10, can you pick up three here and there to get second and manageable?
Right.
You know, so that's the thing for me that I think makes the offensive line that X factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt, before we go here, I want to talk a little, you want to play a little game, do some over-unders that Jake and I normally do?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So let's do over-under Georgia 250 passing yards.
Over-under Georgia 250 passing yards. That's tough. I'm going to say, man, Stetson Bennett, I couldn't tell you maybe, but he's been very efficient this year.
And they haven't had to throw a lot, though, you know?
That's the thing. They haven't had to throw the football.
So it's kind of a testament to how close. You want to take the under? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under.
All right. He had 250 against Kentucky. That was the last time he had 250. And JT Daniels didn't play at all that game, so he obviously got all the work there. Let's do Georgia obviously uses many running backs, so no individual running back is probably going to have over 100, but let's do 200 total rushing yards for Georgia, over under.
Well, I'll take the over.
Okay.
I do think Tennessee's going to have more success in this game against Georgia early on. And I think Tennessee sustained success against Alabama. I think they had a really good day against Alabama, against Brian Robinson. Yeah, he finally started getting some of his, but I think the Georgia defense is better than Alabama's. I think, you know, they're going to be able to keep Tennessee, you know, in check a little bit more and have chances to really pound the ball. And I think you'll see Georgia get over 200 in this game.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And coming off his career high and yards and touchdowns for Hendon Hooker against Kentucky with, you know, 316 and 4. Hendon Hooker, 250 passing yards over under against the vaunted Georgia defense.
Under.
And Tennessee, 150 rushing yards total as a team over under.
Give me somebody to break one against Georgia on Saturday. I'll take it.
Oh, okay. I like it. And what's I know we do the staff predictions, but you know, podcast listeners get the inside scoop. What's your final score prediction for Tennessee, Georgia?
Tennessee, Georgia. I do think Tennessee is going to have some success. I think they're going to take that game into the second half. You know, into some point in the third quarter. I think Georgia has obviously the best defense in the country, but you know, take away. You know, that last 2-minute sequence against Florida, which you don't take away, you know, that's the way the game is played and the reason that we play it. But, you know, they were in that game and, you know, Florida was in that game. And, you know, I think Tennessee would beat Florida right now if I had to pick. I think that this game is going to be closer than people think. And it may not be as close as the scoreboard reflects at the end, but I'm going to say Georgia 38-21.
Okay, 38-21. So that's what, 59? So you're taking the over on the total of 55.
And I will probably change my score prediction for the
no, don't we all?
Between here and there, it's Thursday. We won't put that out till Saturday morning, but. Change that probably at some point. I feel comfortable saying 38-24, but I'm going 38-21 today. Just three touchdowns for Tennessee on Saturday,
okay.
Which I think is an accomplishment.
Yeah, I had at the very beginning of the week, I was really high on Georgia, but I just got to think of the Kentucky game and how explosive Tennessee was, and I think they'll get to 20. I have 41 20 Georgia at the moment. I have Georgia covering by 1 point. You have Tennessee covering, but we've both taken the over here. So everybody, Matt and I are the biggest experts in all of betting. So listen to us and put the house on what we say. Right, Matt?
Yeah. My betting career is over.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody, be sure and follow Matt Ray at Matt Ray SI on Twitter and all the socials. And also follow A Volunteer Country on SI. The handle is still at VR2 on SI, but like I said, we are Volunteer Country on SI. Matt, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today. What you got planned for the rest of the week?
You know, I'm just getting ready for this game and waiting on Saturday to get here pretty much. Not sure that I'm headed anywhere this tomorrow night to cover recruiting. Playoffs are starting. Different guys are in and out of the playoff picture. So, you know, that's kind of the plan for now.
Absolutely, my man. And to our listeners, thank you so much for allowing Matt and I to do what we love week in and week out, and that is to talk Tennessee sports, whether it's on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or even Sunday. And everybody, we're going to be on here real soon again with you all, and thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.